I've got to tell you, every time I come here, it doesn't matter how many times I leave and how many times I come back, it is always an emotional thing. Because there are a lot of new faces here that I don't know, you know. Well, I may know some of them. I know them somewhat because of Zoom, so I get to see your faces and stuff, and sometimes I see what you're cooking for dinner or whatever is in the background, you know, or your cat or whatever you have. But I do get to see your faces, so I do feel like I know you a little bit. But for those that I've known for a long time, it's always emotional. It's always emotional every time because I sit back and I, you know, it's like there's ghosts. I look over and I can still see Jordan curled up on sleep on that bench right there. That not that many years ago, you know. I can still look down and see Carolyn sitting over there next to Frank. It wasn't that long ago, you know. So there's always those kinds of memories, you know. It was, best I can tell, probably 50 to 52 years ago that I was baptized in this pond of water behind me. Mason baptized me, and it was probably around 1971 or 72, somewhere in that vicinity. So when you start thinking about that, you start thinking about how many people that you know and what this walk has been. Hi, Ron. Good to see Ron and Patty back there. So when you start this walk, and I'm going to use the term walk because I think that's a good term. When I come back, I can't help but remember, you know, the day that I was baptized, the day that I decided this is the life that I want to live. This is where I want to go. This is who I want to be. And I wanted to do anything, absolutely anything that I could do to ensure that. And now when I look back, you know, 50 years or so, I recognize how many times that I've fallen. That when I had all the good intentions when I left here, Mason remembers it. I jumped up on the car roof. I was going to save the world. I knew that I had the message, and I knew that people were going to believe me, and I knew people were going to follow the Christ that I had learned about and loved, and I knew they would. Well, some of them did, a lot of them didn't, obviously. So on this walk that I began, there was a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of sin. There's a lot of falling. There was a lot of things that I didn't even anticipate. But I'm still walking. I'm still on this long walk, as some of you are still on this long walk. And sometimes it seems very long, and it seems almost impossible. Other times it seems like a very short walk. And I think about people, and I'm not trying to pick on Crystal, but I think about, Crystal, are you married? No, I didn't think you were. And I was thinking about Crystal last week, and I thought about her again this week, and I thought how difficult it can be or how hard it can be if you're alone, if you are the only one in your family that sees and recognizes Christ, how difficult that can be. And I pray for those people that they recognize the importance of having people around them and to encourage them and comfort them. And that's a hard, and I hope that you, all of you that do have somebody with you, that have a spouse, that you think about those that don't. Think about those that are trying to make this walk, and they're trying to make it alone to some degree. And you're never truly alone, but to some degree you are. So I guess what I'm saying is that by God's grace, and I can't, that seems insufficient to really say what I'm feeling here. By God's grace, I'm still here. By God's grace, I don't care how many times I've fallen down and how many times that I've gotten so far away from the path that we started, that His grace has been able to bring me back to where I belong. And that's why I get rather emotional here. You know, there's all kind of metaphors. Some people say when we're born, we start the path of life, right? You're a little baby. You start off and you have all these experiences, and then there comes a time when that path ends, that walk is over. And then there's another walk, as I mentioned. That walk is the walk of a Christian. When you started that, those of you that started rather new, I don't know, Bob, how long it's been, you and your wife, but it might have been fairly recently, best I can understand. So you've started the new walk, and in a sense, it would be a little bit like if you decided that you and what was your wife's name? Peggy, okay, it would be like Bob and Peggy saying, you know, we're going to walk the Appalachian Trail. Well, it's a pretty long walk and a pretty arduous walk, right? And so you start this walk, and then you run into somebody who's just finishing the walk, and they're getting to pass you, and then you go, what was it like? And they go, oh, boy. Oh, boy. The bears, the rattlesnakes, the crazies, the cold. Maybe you don't want to do this, right? But no, so what you're doing is you're starting your walk, even though you're over 20, I can tell that. Even though you're 20, you're starting your walk, but in this, you know, you are running against people that have coming toward the end of the trail. Hopefully Frank has a long more time on the end of the trail, but Frank is getting toward the end of the trail. Mason and Pagey, because they're a little older than I am, I'm not far behind them. There's some of you who are just starting this walk. So I like to think about that. So that takes me to the word was one of my favorite words. Well, compassion is my favorite word. But one of my other favorite words is sojourner. And I think it's a word that we don't use the term sojourner in our vocabulary. We really don't. No one's going to say, hey, I'm going to go down and sojourn for a while. But, you know, there goes John and Angela just went and sojourned not too long ago, right? They went down to a place. It wasn't home. That was not where they were going to stay. But they sojourned. They stayed. And the whole idea of sojourning, by the way, I hope this thing doesn't, I'm trying, it's hanging on here. The whole idea of sojourner is that there's a lot of other words I would say that are related to it. Stranger is a good word. Foreigner is a good word. Temporary is a good word. So when the Bible talks about sojourners, and as the passage we read, it said that they went down we didn't use the word sojourn in the text, but that's what they were doing. They were living into a place that wasn't home. It was an unfamiliar place. They went to somewhere else. They lived in tents with others. They were sojourning in a land. When Egypt crossed all the way across, you know, when they went across Egypt, they were sojourners. They were passing through some place that wasn't their home. So what is the point? The point is that we are sojourners. And if you grasp the concept of a sojourner, if you really think about what that means to be a sojourner, it sort of changes your life. Because, you know, when I was in Italy, I knew I wasn't going to stay there. I was a sojourner. We were there for a while. There's certain conduct that is expected of you. There's different kinds of laws. There's all kind of things you got to be careful. You don't want to really become part of something. You want to kind of maintain who you are, but you're just sort of passing through, right? So when the Bible says that we're sojourners, we need to recognize that it is temporary. We are passing through. Now, I know maybe someone says, we're home. Well, home's Port Wine Amy or something. Well, in a sense it is. It's your temporary home. It's almost like, you know, it's like one of those hermit crabs. When it finally gets too big, it just takes its shell and finds a new place. Well, we're all kind of hermit crabs in a sense, because we're going to outgrow this shell, and we're going to have to find a place that's a lot better. And that's what everybody's doing. A sojourner is always looking forward to another home, a place that is truly home. So every one of you that started this walk on this path of Christianity, you're a sojourner. You are passing through a land, and that it's important for us to remember. So I guess before I use the first passage, I'm going to tell you this quick story. Last year, I wrote a story about three men that were combat veterans, and serious combat veterans. One of the guys, J.D. or Justin LeHoux, was in a terrible firefight, lost 29 of his men, you know, in Iraq. All three of them were combat veterans, and they decided, what can we do to bring awareness to those that are still lost? What can we do to be able to raise money, to be able to for people to think about the, you know, those that are the MIAs? So they started this group where they go to all over the world, and they're able to locate the remains of soldiers, of American soldiers, and then bring them back to the United States to give them a proper burial. That's a pretty tall order. So the three of them, Justin and Rocky, and then Sheena was the other one. Again, all of them serious combat. All of them had lost friends. they've been in terrible, terrible situations. They decided they were going to start walking from Boston, Massachusetts, all the way to Seaside, Oregon. Now, you know what? On the Highway 20, that's 3,320 miles, if I remember right. 3,000 miles they were going to start walking from all the way there to get to the end. So, in other words, they had a journey before them, didn't they? They had a walk they decided to do. It took them 6 months. You can imagine what they encountered. They encountered, Shino, he said, within no time he had blisters. He got the wrong kind of shoes. Then he had more blisters. He could hardly walk. And then one of them got food poisoning and was real sick. And then they went and they got stuck up in, you know, up in Northern California, up in the mountains. It was so freezing, nobody could get up there. And so they had to walk across these hot deserts. They were walking this close to a highway, so cars are almost hitting them all the way across for 6 months. That's a heck of a journey, I think. You know? That was a journey. But, you know, there's a lot to be learned by that journey. Just as that journey is, you know, a lot for us to be learned by that journey. You know, I would tell you this, they didn't just willy-nilly said, hey, I'm just going to get someone to walk with me. That'll be kind of cool. They knew each other. They knew each other very well. And they knew that if we start this journey, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be real challenging because we've been in some challenging situations, but we're determined to do it. And they did. They chose another person with them to make that journey. So, once again, there is a lesson for us in this, that the people that we choose, we think who we're going to walk with, could be rather important. I've walked with some people in my life that weren't helpful. In fact, they were harmful. They probably took me down roads I didn't want to go to and did things that weren't particularly good. That happens, right? So you want to think about sometimes, you know, we talk about marriage, you want to have a partner with you that's going to help you, encourage you in your walk, not someone who's going to drag you down. If we're wise and if we're able to do that, then maybe we do that. Okay, so the first passage that I'll use, you know, I could actually do this whole lesson without ever even reading a passage, but I'm going to do this old-fashioned. I have a Bible up here just to show you. This is one, it's not a computer, right? It's 1 Peter, the second chapter, verse 11. He says, beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles. If you're exiled from a place, you're exiled from a land, it's not home anymore, right? And that's what he says to all of us. He's writing now to Christians. You, in a sense, have been exiled from the world. You are sojourners in this land. This is not your permanent dwelling place. Now, I know that you're thinking, he already told us that. He already said that once. I'm saying that because it's more of a problem than we like to admit. Look around. Even those of us that believe in God, even those of us that have faith, somehow we deceive ourselves into thinking we're going to be here forever, or that all the stuff that we have that's really not going to slow me down, or all the things I'm involved with that take me away from Christ are really not going to harm me, because I don't see myself really as just passing through. I guarantee you, I talked to JD about when he was passing through Iowa, and you know what he had? I said, what are you all carrying? He said, not very much. He had a little thing that he pulled, and everything they had, he said, we can't carry anything. We have to travel light. We're traveling 3,300 miles walking on foot. We can't afford to be carrying a TV or computers or anything else. We just can't afford it. Boy, what a picture that is for me. I'm traveling a lot farther than 3,000 miles, I guarantee you. I think heaven's a lot farther than that. The idea is that you don't want to carry too much because it's going to be too heavy. All right. So let me go move. I'm going to move on to what's really important here now. So I want to go back again. When we think about being on this journey, We want to consider the people that have gone before us. And that's in Hebrews, he says that, actually. You know, we talk about, in Hebrews 11th chapter, we talk about how it being the chapter of faith, the book of faith, right? The who's who of all the famous people that had faith in Moses and all, and going on down. So in the 12th chapter, verse 1, he says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses," who? All those that have come before us. I don't care who it was, Daniel, Abraham, Joshua, anybody, way back there, guess what? All the way up to now. The cloud of witnesses is people, you know, actually all the way up to now for us. All those that have gone before us. "Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of God, on the throne of God. Let us lay aside every weight and every sin which slows us down." I don't know what they are for you. I know what they are for me sometimes. Sometimes it's the Dodgers. Sometimes it's, you know, there's a variety of things that get in my way. There's a variety of things that slow me down, right? That they weigh me down so that I can't run as fast as I need to be running on this race. And I guess when he uses the term race, remember he uses another word that he used I liked. He uses the word endurance, right? Run with endurance. You know what an endurance runner is? You have to practice. You don't just get out and decide you're going to run 5 or 6 miles. Guess what? You're going to have leg cramps, or you're going to get sick and fall over. You're not going to make it. If you're going to run a marathon, which is, quite frankly, what the long road of Christianity is, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint for most of us. You know, it could be a sprint for some. You could be baptized, follow the Lord, and then 2 days later you get struck by lightning. I mean, it can happen. But for most of us, it's a marathon, right? So if we're going to run with endurance, we're going to have to be able to sort of practice a little bit. We're going to have to be able to strengthen ourselves so that we're able to make this long walk. How do you do it? How do the young people like Crystal, how do you do it? You meet with other people, you read, you study, you pray, you find someone else who can encourage you. That's one of the ways that you do it. Each one of us is in that race. Let me go to 2 Timothy for a minute. In 2 Timothy, the second chapter, verse 4, he says, "No soldier," let me back up a little first of all. He says, "Share in sufferings as a good soldier of Christ Jesus." So now he gives us another picture. You know, he gives us many pictures to help us understand this walk or this race that we're in. So now he uses the term, as a Christian, as a soldier. And he says, "So share in sufferings as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuits, since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him." Now, we're not going to make an argument about some people, you know, giving their life to politics, because some people like politics. Some people want to do this. But I would suggest that in this, he's saying that if you're a soldier, and every one of you, by the way, is a soldier, male or female, old or young, we're all soldiers in a sense in that army. If we're going to be this way, we can't get entangled in the things which take us away from our mission. There is a mission, right? People in the military understand what it means to have a mission. You don't question it. You may internally question it, but you don't question it outwardly, right? So we're in this mission. Now, what's interesting for me is that the word entangled is, I mean, it probably draws a picture for you. When you think about being entangled in something, what does that look like? I mean, I was thinking, think about a whale. A whale is free. It can go from ocean to, it can go from here to Alaska. It can swim wherever it wants to swim. It's wide open and free as a bird, unless it gets caught in a net. And it gets caught in it. If it gets entangled in a net, it can't breathe, and it'll die. Boy, isn't that a picture for us? We're free. We've been freed. We got so much world we can travel. But if we get entangled with the affairs of this life, the things that really don't matter, they just twist us and wrap themselves around us so that we're not able to do anything, we can't breathe. And if you don't breathe, eventually you're going to die. You know, interesting, we were in the class this morning when Jordan was talking. He used the word priority, and that was the right word, I think, in the context. When Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, right? And his righteousness, and all these things will be right added to you. What we don't think about sometimes when he says, seek ye first, is there has to be something second. If I'm seeking something first, there's something second. Well, I may have a job. I may have a spouse. I may have a lot of other duties in my life that are implied, but put them in the right order. So it doesn't mean that a person, people says, oh my God, you're so saying I can't have a family, I can't have a job, I can't vote. And we're not saying any of that. He's just saying, know yourself, know what, you know, what clogs the drain. What is the stuff that gets in your way? And it's probably different for each one of you, a little bit anyway, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Dion doesn't have any problems. I don't know. He's I bet he does. I bet even Dion probably had a bad thought once, or he has things that get in his way. All of us do. And it depends on your age. It changes with age. When you're 16 to probably about 40, you get preoccupied with some bad thoughts, right? When you get a little older, those thoughts aren't quite as bad usually. You have different bad thoughts. You get covetous. You know, I want to try to buy everything and secure everything and have enough insurance to last me the rest of my life, even though I'm going to die, which never makes sense. Anyway, the great thing about this, Henry and I were talking the other day about, it was just on the way here, because he's always reading, and he's reading to me when I'm driving and things. And we were talking about when Jesus went out into the wilderness and when he was tempted, right? 40 days tempted. But then it says, and then the angels ministered to him. You know what? He was never alone. People think about Jesus. The only time he was alone was on the cross when they turned his back on him. There was some aloneness in the garden that his disciples turned away from him. But other than that, he had help. He knew that he could talk to the Father. He knew that angels could come to him. There's a good message in that. You know, in Mormonism, Mormons don't send they don't send people out by themselves. They don't do it. They send them out in twos and pairs and sometimes more because they need to encourage each other and challenge each other, right? So they're not being alone it would be a really hard walk. You know, the Apostle Paul, let me go back to Philippians here. The Apostle Paul, and most of us think a lot about Paul. I think we do. He's such a great example. But Paul, I think if I had to describe Paul's character, I would say he might have been kind of salty at times. I kind of get that. You know, the falling out he had with Barnabas, you know, over John Mark, we kind of say, wait a minute, that doesn't sound very nice. Well, guess what? Maybe he was upset. Maybe he didn't like it. Maybe he said, oh, go ahead. You go ahead and Barnabas and take John Mark. I'm not doing it, you know. And there's times you can see, you know. And then at one point, remember when he got they called him. He called him a whited wall. Was it the high priest a whited wall? And he reached down and slapped him. Well, it shows that he had a little bit of spunk going, right? He had a great spirit. Anyway, so Paul going on his way, we also see in his letters a real suffering. A hard, you know, when you're making the walk that he walked, it wasn't an easy walk. Yeah, it might have been easier in some senses because God spoke to him and said, this is what I want you to do and what I want you to be. You're going to go to the Gentiles. You're going to go to kings. So you have that going for you. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, I don't think God has ever said, Mason, I want you to move to Port Hueneme and live in this house and do that thing. I don't think he's ever that direct. Maybe he leads us. Paul had this pretty direct communication going about where he was going to do and what he was going to do. Anyway, back to Philippians, the second chapter. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon so that I too may be cheered by news of you. For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare. For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served me in the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. And I trust in the Lord that shortly I myself will come also. And I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, and fellow worker, and fellow soldier, and your messenger, and minister to my need. For he has been longing for you all, and has been distressed because he heard that he was ill. And indeed he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. There's many of you here that have lost people that you loved and were very close to, and could probably identify with that. You can probably say, you know, I didn't think I could survive what I went through. And sometimes we might have been at that point. But I look at the love of God with Timothy and with Paul. Paul says, I could, sorrow upon sorrow would have happened to me, but he was able to revive Titus. He kept him alive, kept him going. When I think about this, and this is really what I would say is the core of what I want to say today. When I think about a 50 or 52-year walk with Christ, I think about all the people in my life who have walked with me. Some walked a little while. Some walked a long time. I think about my family. I think about Mason, often how we started this walk, our Appalachian Trail, a long time ago, you know, as I did with John. He was little John then. He was just a little guy, you know. But we started this walk a long time ago. And others were like that too. Frank, for a long time. I'm sure that we think about this walk, I think about Larry. And I think about Joyce. I think about Rick Hester. These are all people that have walked with us and walked with me and challenged me and comforted me. And I hope that we all realize that. All these people, this is our cloud of witnesses that have helped us on this. This is where it's hard for me, is when I think it's very difficult sometimes to think about immortality, to think about not having the flesh as we know it, not having the people that we know in our lives. I can barely comprehend this. And yet I look at when every time I think that I'm not going to be able to go any further, God seems to always provide what I need in who I need. It's a person that maybe not very long. Maybe they say a few words, and it's enough to waken me up. So I think in my own life, when I felt like I was at one of my worst points, I feel like Jacob. I feel like the old man in his old age, and he has a son, you know, a son, not Joseph, but Henry. So I have a young son now who, when things are difficult, and sometimes he was difficult, that I feel for Jacob. There's something about your youngest child that he had the son. And I worried about Henry. I prayed about Henry. He'll probably tell you I wrote things in a Bible to Henry. And Henry didn't want any part of what I was doing and what we were doing. And that tormented my soul. And when I least expected it, because he decided he was going to go out and, in essence, prove Christianity to be wrong. And over the course of it, found out it was right. And he embraced the Lord. And not only did he embrace the Lord, he became, for me, someone to walk with me for a while. I don't know how long God's going to allow me to walk with him. I don't know. It's a strange thing to have a child be your brother, your child, your friend. Those are hard things to understand. And so whatever the time is, I thank God for it, because Henry has been just what I needed at the right time. He was somebody who was great at comforting me, but he was also great at challenging me. He doesn't lack the ability to challenge somebody, I assure you. Things are pretty cut and dry sometimes with him. And just as John does with his dad sometimes it's like time to grow up, time to be what you say you are. So Henry has been, God has given me a mirror, a walking mirror. It's okay, look in the mirror. All right, straighten up, live right. But in that, what a great encouragement it's been that we get to walk together, that you two get to walk together. We get to walk together for a while. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing it is. You know, in a lot of these journeys that I've taken, I was in my life, I've been afraid, and I would guess most of you probably have. You ever done something that you felt was right, but you were just terrified? Oh man, I've done that so many times. I would have been a terrible real soldier, because I'm just a coward by heart. I wouldn't have been very good. But I've had enough courage at times to take on things that were over my head, that I was afraid to do. Even public speaking, I was terrified of doing this. But I said, you know what? We can do this. We can do it because we have somebody to help us. So what I would say with, when you think about Paul, when you think about Barnabas or Timothy or Titus, or make it current. Think about those that have encouraged you, that comforted you, that challenged you, and then flip it. How can you be that to somebody else? When you say sometimes, "Why, I'm not a preacher, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a song leader, what can I do?" You can do far more than you'll ever know. You can encourage somebody else when they, and you might not even know that they're weak. You might not even know that they're suffering. But if you watch, you'll see it. And that'll be an opportunity for you to go and to strengthen them, to lift them up and help them, pick them up and get them back on that road. And sometimes it takes patience, a lot of patience. But see, what I'm driving at is God uses people to help people. People are always saying, well, I'm out there and the Holy Spirit's doing this for me. And you know what? You're the angel. God uses you as angels to help somebody else, to strengthen them, to support them, to encourage them. What a powerful and tremendous job that is. What a privilege. People don't know how much it might encourage, that Michael might encourage somebody when he shows up, when he does the things that he does, when he takes care of stuff. And I mean, he's sort of this quiet warrior. It encourages people. I'm encouraged when I see John every time. You know, I'm always encouraged by people that are younger than me that outgrow and outsmart me. That's easy to do, but he does it. So I guess I'm going to sort of leave you with this. The very first thing that we have to do is recognize that we are in a foreign land. This is not home. We are passing through. We are on a temporary journey, and we don't need to carry a bunch of stuff to get where we're going. In fact, the stuff's going to get us out of the way. We recognize that we're strangers. We recognize it's temporary. We recognize that even this body is temporary, the physical one, until we get a new one. And then we recognize if we're sojourners, I need help. Don't be afraid to ask somebody, I need help. Can you just listen to me? Can you support me? Can you help? Can you read with me? I need help. Folks, members of this congregation have helped me so many times. I'm indebted forever. I could never give back enough as has been given to me. People have supported me in the past financially, supported me emotionally, they've forgiven me, they've encouraged me. You know, if there's any good in me, I might say it's because you've allowed me to be that. And I hope you do that for others. You know, and everybody uses it in probably every speech, every locker room speech ever given in a football field or anything else. When you're behind by 48 points, don't give up. Don't give up. I don't know. I may have told you this before. I was in the locker room with a guy named Jim Valvano, who was the coach of the North Carolina. I don't know what their last team name was, but yeah, what the Wolfpack. You're right. So we're down there, and they're playing Virginia, the number one team in the nation. And we're running down the hall, and they're behind by 6 points. And it's halftime, so they're all running down the hall, and here's Jim Valvano. He's running down the hall, and he's beating on the walls, and he's going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I went, he said, we got him right where we want him. We got him right where we want him. He said, we're only 6 points down. He said, stay close, and something good will happen. You know, it did. And they won the national championship. They upset Virginia. They went on to Houston. They upset. Because he believed that something good. In other words, what he was saying was, don't quit. Something good is going to happen. I felt like quitting more than 100 times. When these guys walked across, I asked them, did you ever feel like quitting? They said, oh, did we ever? Oh, it just got monotonous, walking and walking and walking day after day, and your feet are hurting, and it's hot, and oh, we thought, why did we do this? And then said, no, we said we're going to do it, and we're going to do it. And they finished their course at Christmas. The passage everybody uses, is used so often, is in 2 Timothy 4. In verse 6, Paul says, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race, I've kept the faith, and henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all those who love his appearing. It's easy to quote. It's hard to apply. We are in a race. We are on a journey. Some of us are closer to the end than others. But we can't quit. When you feel like quitting, choose somebody that you care about, that you love, that you can help and ask for help. I want to share something with you. I shared it with Mason last year. And the only point I think in even sharing this is it's kind of an answer to maybe a prayer that I was having. It's probably been 3 years ago now. 3 years ago, I had sort of what they called a mini stroke, and I was in the hospital a couple of times, and then I had to have shoulder surgery, and I was going through a hard time. And I was laying on the couch one morning. It was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was wide awake. I was wide awake, and I was just looking out the window. And I had the most incredible experience that I'm reluctant to ever even share with people because they think I'm Pentecostal. I'm not. And I'm not even going to say what it was. I'm just going to tell you that I had this experience where suddenly it was as though a voice was talking to me. And my right arm was messed up so I couldn't write. So I used my left arm and I tried to scribble down what was told me, what came to me. And then I had what was like a vision. And in this vision, I saw, it was like Mount Everest. But there was this trail going up the top of this mountain, and it was really narrow. And I thought, oh, boy, I don't like heights one bit. They scare me. I'm just always afraid I'm going to fall off. I just don't like heights. And in front of me, I could just see 2 feet, and stepping in one step on the rock and one step of the rock. And then that whatever it was, it wasn't a voice I could hear. It said, follow me. Step where I step. And I still have that scribbled down somewhere. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't know what that means other than this. It was a good reminder for me. It's a dangerous walk, and I need to step where Christ steps. And if I'm going to make it over that mountain, I'm going to follow him because he knows how to take me over the mountain. That, to me, has to be the lesson for all of us. Step where he steps. Follow him. And if we'll do that, then we're going to be able to make it through this course. Again, we're sojourners. I thank God that he's allowed me to walk with some of you for a short time. Maybe someone we get to walk a little longer together. And then someday we'll get to where we're all going, if we trust that and if we believe that. If you are not a child of God, if you're not a Christian, it breaks my heart. It really does. Because I know, I recognize, and John said it so well today, when we were talking about those that had left Jesus, how they turned away, and so who do we go? Thou hast the words of life. I came to the same conclusion that John came to, and Henry's come to the same conclusion, and that is not without a lot of study. He reads a lot of stuff, a lot of philosophy, a lot of people. His brain is 10 times the size of mine. I can't even keep up with him. But he's come to the conclusion that there is only one way, and that's through Christ. That is the way that we're able to make it over this mountain, and we can be with him forever. I hope that encourages you. That's my goal today, is that God might use me to encourage you to keep walking. And if you got off the trail, get back on it. You're still alive. Remember the great passage, more hope for a live dog than a dead lion. You know, we might all be dogs, but we're still alive. So get back on the trail. All right, if that, we'll leave you with that. If anybody is not a member, you can come forward now, and you can be glad to say that you want to embrace Christ, you want to start your journey, you want to be baptized into Christ, you want to have your sins washed away, and you want to be able to step into the greatest family ever made, the kingdom of God. Won't you come as we stand and sing?